listening to Thursday Front Page on the Pulse. Conspiracy theories are interesting. A lot of them have been popping up over recent times. We've got Bill Gates and George Soros are evil people who are trying to inject stuff into our bodies. And we've got the QAnon suggesting the world's been taken over by pedophiles. And then there's health issues of we're being injected with 5G's something or other technology. It's really quite confusing. I've been intrigued as to where and why they start, what drives them. But we've got someone on the line who's done a little bit more research on it than we have. Joining us for the second time, Sue Barrett, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rob.
It's a really interesting time. They seem, the old conspiracy theories are, well, I suppose they've been about since time immemorial, but there seems to be floods of them now and people more open to easily accept a little bit of advice. What do you think is at the base of some of these more obscure ones that have popped up in recent times?
Well, I probably can't speak to the specifics of certain ones and why they may have popped up specifically, but one of the things that I've been looking at, and I just want to preface by saying I'm not an expert on conspiracy theories, but I am very interested in how people think and make decisions and whether they make decisions in their best interest. And one of the things that we know from how conspiracy theories can really take hold, particularly in times of uncertainty, is people want certainty, all right? They don't. The human brain doesn't like when things are unstable because it sends it into what we call the fight, flight and freeze mode, and it's anxious and it's going to give me some stability. I don't like all of this. This doesn't make sense. I like things to be calm. I want to be able to get about my daily activities. I don't have to be looking over my shoulder all the time for the grizzly bears that might come at me and so on and so forth. So this is something that's in our human nature to want calm, consistent, you know, stability, because it makes us able to get on with what we want to do. So when things like COVID hit, of course, that throws everything up in the air and people get really anxious and look, nature, random things can happen. Science can tell us this. They know that not everything can be explained, except that there are certain types of people that think everything has a reason behind it. There's a cause for everything. Someone's behind that. And that's how conspiracy theories can take hold. When people want certainty, and then they actually then say, someone has to have done this to us. So we have to find out what that is. When in fact, sometimes things just happen randomly and there's no explanation. We might be able to back end it or research it and find out where it came from, but it wasn't through malevolent means. It wasn't someone intentionally doing this. Now there are things that do happen intentionally, of course, but this is the problem when we put, you know, we sort of have a blanket view, oh, there must be a reason and a cause and someone's behind it.
It is quite interesting the way people can quickly grab hold. I think normally humans are instinctively keen to research and analyse a little bit more, but in these particular cases, there doesn't. And I'm talking about people I know myself that are intelligent people, successful in their work or business, but they're happy just to take it on face value and not do their own research to assess the validity of something. Is that a different sort of human nature that's popped in?
Well, look, it depends if it's convenient for you, right? If it's convenient for you and you want to hold on to that because that gives you that sort of that status or that power or whatever, then it's convenient to hold on to it. If we could step back a bit, let's have a look at the world sort of currently. Firstly, the world is getting more complex. There is an ocean, there's oceans of information and opinions out there. And anyone can actually claim to be an expert. I'm doing my air quotes here, you know, an expert, whether they're credentialed or not. And so there's this sort of saying that says, oh, I'm entitled to my opinion. And I go, well, actually, no, you're not. Not if it's not based on facts and evidence, right? So people can say anything they like, but it may not be true. The problem is that people, if it sounds plausible, if it sounds like it's a convenient answer because it helps, you know, satiate any anxieties that you have, then it's much easier for people to grab onto those sorts of things and say, well, see, I told you so. That's what it is. But what people don't do is they don't actually start to look beneath the surface, and they don't actually start to look at the cause and effect. And as I said, as things get more complex, it makes it harder to actually understand more complex systems. So here's the thing. A simplistic answer to a complex issue is always wrong. But people will grab those simple slogans, those statements, and they'll hold on to them because it gives them comfort. Or in some cases, it gives them power. And so you have to be really careful. So we always have a saying in our family and my business and with our clients, watch who you let near your mind, because they may not be doing it for your well-being. And so we live in communities where our words, our behaviours and our actions affect ourselves and others for good or bad, which is why we need to be careful about what we read, who we let near our minds, how we make decisions. And, you know, for example, if we take COVID, you know, the health experts, you know, are correct in saying that, you know, that governments were spreading misinformation, or government MPs, or certain government MPs, were spreading misinformation about coronavirus, and that they were actually a threat to public health. But if you wanted to believe that certain MP or MPs, you know, when they were claiming that wearing masks violates human rights and things like that, but there's no correlation to that. That's just basically misinformation and fear-mongering. And it leaves people even more anxious and afraid, which makes them then even cling on to some of these, you know, simplistic answers, so that they don't feel, you know, that they feel like someone's doing something. But what ends up happening is that they are vulnerable to these sorts of things go unchallenged.
What I'm seeing a little bit of lately, and I might be wrong in my assessment, but and it could be purely coincidental, but we've become very much a, excuse me, a capitalist v. socialist arguments in society. And we probably went through it quite heavily during the last 12 months of the American presidential election. It got very personal and divisive in the country. But there seems to be these stories that pop up at a time where there's pressure on one particular side of politics, and then a story will pop up which creates interest, but it soon works out that there's no truth. But these diversions, if you like, from each side of the political fence, is that me being cynical, or do you think there's a little bit of that? So conspiracy theories are created for a need at the time in your social balance?
You're not being cynical. There are malevolent people out there using human vulnerabilities, such as this fear and anxiety I talk about, this need for certainty. So what they do is these sorts of people, be they individuals or part of an organised approach, they prey on the vulnerable. And they come up with these plausible, you know, they sound plausible, these slogans, these statements. These people can often be the best communicators going around. But what they're spinning are false messages, and they manipulate facts, images and the media. And what their intention is to actually brainwash people into believing that they're the ones with the answers. They're the ones that can save them. You know, they're the ones that, you know, are going to be the champion leader that will take them forward. But what people don't look is beyond the facade. And what we find is when people are not checking facts, they actually then can be taken advantage of. And this is what these people rely upon. So they use social media, memes and articles and this clickbait stuff, which is why now you see on Twitter and Facebook, you know, before you share something, it says, have you actually read the article? Like, it's asking you, have you actually done your due diligence? Because I believe as citizens, in the world that we live in, as citizens, we need to be informed citizens. I think it's part of our civic duty. But like I said, a lot of people are overwhelmed with information. There's so much information out there. Most of it, you know, is inaccessible or wrong or not helpful. But it sounds plausible if people market it and sell it that way. But as I said, we've got to... education is really important. In schools and stuff, you know, in English, teaching people how to analyse text, how to analyse information is incredibly important, so that you know, am I getting information from a reliable source, or am I getting spin and propaganda. And again, it can look plausible because it looks like it's come from a reputable source and all of that kind of stuff, but they play you. Because what, you know, people like this do is that they communicate with a high-sounding vagueness. They identify, you know, an unshakable commitment to moral decency or, you know, without actually embodying these qualities themselves. So they're playing it. They're basically trying to trick a lot of us. And that's not everyone I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people that sound plausible, but in fact they have other means and they want us to vote for them or to, you know, follow them or, you know, pay them money for something. And there are so many people that have been taken advantage of these.
Yeah, I suppose over the journey, the religious evangelists are, I guess, excuse me, most famous in this area, but it's come very much part of the modern political field. And I was fascinated to watch over the four-year term of Donald Trump, where a lot of the old Republican Party people were really strongly opposed to him pre his election victory. Once he got it, they all sort of fell in line once he became popular. Then when the end was nigh, that once again the party had split and there was a chance for them to re-establish themselves. But post-election, there's still 70 million people voted for Donald Trump. So the party has once again said, well, here's an opportunity. Let's get rid of Trump and re-establish ourselves. But so many of them have connected to those assured $70 million votes, but there's got to be recriminations for that sort of activity.
Well, this is the challenge when things aren't scrutinised. So I'm going to come back to our civic duty as citizens, that democracy, when you're talking about the American democracy and Australia, we talk about Australian democracy, but democracy is for the people. And I think what can happen is that a lot of us have defaulted our democratic rights and duties to the handfuls of a few. Now, when you elect someone in, you know, when you elect a candidate into, or, you know, someone in to represent you, ideally what they should be doing is actually representing you, you know, the constituents, you know, the overall constituency. But what we're finding is that in politics, a lot of these party politicians in particular are in fact actually not representing their citizens at all. They're actually representing vested interests, those moneyed, you know, mates who are in fact, you know, wanting to gain access to whether it's our, you know, money through government or power or, you know, markets or whatever. And as citizens, if we take our eye off the ball and we don't hold politicians to account, then you'll find that they'll do whatever they like to try and hold on to whatever power and wealth that goes with that. It was, I think it was Harriet Truman who said that any politician that actually gets rich being a politician is a crook. And so this is something that's very interesting. I found a quote about the constitutional risk and how democracy can decay. And it's by Anne Toomey. Would you like me just to read it? It's a paragraph.
Yeah.
I think it could be helpful. Because when we as citizens don't pay attention to our democracy and hold our politicians to account, bad things happen. And she said this here. One indicator of democratic decay is a lack of respect for the rule of law. This can be seen when the government dismisses strict compliance with the rule of law and instead opts for an assessment of constitutional risk, in inverted commas, whether it is likely that anyone with standing to do so will challenge the constitutionality or legality of its conduct. While this approach may be pragmatic, it reveals an underlying acceptance of failure to comply with the law as long as one is not called to account for doing so. So there's an article that she's referring to which discusses how a scandal in Australia concerning the allocation of grants to local bodies for sporting activities revealed failures to comply with the Constitution, act within legal power, comply with financial rules and meet ministerial standards. The political benefit is what is placed above the need for strict compliance with the rule of law. So this is how democracy begins to decay. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, the question for that is, we have traditionally followed America. It used to be, when I was a young fellow, we were probably 10 years behind, and now it seems that it's only months in some cases. Are you reasonably comfortable that we have the right number of checks and balances through our democratic and media sections of our society to keep things from getting worse than they currently seem, or are you a bit fearful about the future?
I am deeply concerned, and I've underlined deeply, bolded and highlighted, deeply concerned with the lack of transparency and increased levels of corruption that we're actually seeing in our politics, particularly at a federal level. And I don't know if this is any help at all, but I'm actually a member or a part of a group, not really sort of a membership group, but a group called Voices of Goldstein, because I mentioned last time I'm in that electorate. But there are 38 groups, voices of groups around the country at the moment who are deeply concerned about the issues with representative democracy and how there is high levels of corruption that are actually in play at the moment. And one of the things I thought you might be interested in is a lot of these voices of communities are doing surveys around the country, around their electorates. And we've seen what's happened, not just with these surveys or inquiries or investigations with the public in each of these electorates, but democracy in Australia, as in public satisfaction with democracy in Australia, has crashed over the past decade from 86% to 41%, which is pretty dramatic. And as we know from the Australia Talks survey, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with politicians at the moment. So it's not just me, it's not my opinion. This is actually a lot of information and research coming from all sorts of areas. So what we're finding is that people are really concerned with the undue influence of vested interests influencing and corrupting our political system. Also, too, the bad policies and bad behaviours of politicians. They're also concerned with the government, particularly the federal government, throwing a veil of secrecy over deals and decisions that are keeping us, the public, in the dark. The other thing that's deeply concerning to a lot of the voices of communities is the mainstream media being too concentrated and in particular areas distracting and misleading us with biased reporting and propaganda. I don't know if you're aware, but Australia has the third highest concentration of media ownership in the world, only behind China and Egypt, which is dreadful. Okay, at least in America, they have a balance of media across. Whilst you might have Fox News there, they have others that tend to provide more of a balance. Here in Australia, there's a really strong weighting very much in favour of more right-wing politics in our mainstream media, which is why independent media, public service or broadcasting organisations like yours, etc., who are providing a more balanced view of these sorts of things are incredibly important to our democracy. And so there's some things that might be of value for people to think about.
Sue, we've run out of time. Really appreciate it. When we get you back, we might delve deeper into the corruption angle, which is quite concerning, and it's right through the system, and we're going to pursue something that frustrates the life out of me, is a thing called I'll Take That on Notice, which is the new catch cry in scrutiny of politicians, and it's state, federal, all over, both sides of the fence. I'm a bit concerned about this ability to avoid questioning pretty easily within organisations. So we might go down that path a bit more next time, but thank you for your clarity on, and we keep reminding people, please investigate whatever you hear. It's if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Oh, absolutely. Trust your instincts and ask more questions. And if they can't answer them or they put it on notice, like you said, then be very wary. That's what I would say.
Really appreciate your time. All the very best. We look forward to talking to you again soon, Sue Barrett. And thank you again.
My pleasure. Talk soon. Bye.
Excellent. Former Geelong girl, Sue Barrett, who does a lot of work in this space of just creating thought, making people, certainly making people more accountable. I think that's one of the biggest troubles we have at the moment. So we're going to pursue that because both sides of the political fence are doing it, and it's not good, and it affects each and every one of us. So it's not a left v right thing. It's just a right v wrong thing. And we need to think more about it. So hopefully you'll open up your own mind.